This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The esteemed and lovely and talented Hub Arkish.
Hello.
Hub Arkish.
An experienced NFL reporter with decades of experience.
670 The Score's NFL insider.
Hub is excellent at his job and should be on TV somewhere because he doesn't have a face for radio, but that's for another time.
Shaw Media and Pro Football Weekly.
Just a great job by all. Our crew's been outstanding. We have a new producer in studio, Adam Studzinski. I do need to do me one favor. As wonderful as the highlight cuts are from our sister station and Jeff Joniak and Tom Thayer, burn that damn thing and don't play it again. All right, we've heard it three or four times now, and I get you're doing your job. But we all know, okay? And if I hear it one more time, I'm going to get sick all over Ray Elizondo's equipment, and I just don't want it to happen. So,
Hub Arkish, that's getting better than this.
Hub Arkish with McNeil and Parkins on 670 The Score.
This hour on The Score brought to you by Cars for Kids. Call 1-877-CARS-FOR-KIDS. A ton of NFL to get to with our guy, Hub. How you doing today, Hub?
I am good, fellas. How you doing?
Everything's good. I'm sorry we missed you last night. We were looking forward to our little crosstalk. Everything go well for you before you got out of here? Good show?
Yeah, I apologize. We had to record one of the interviews, so I was in the studio next door. I was looking forward to it, too. But show worked out well. Bears fans are I think, positive more than anything else. Had some interesting baseball talk with Bruce, with Levine. So I had fun. I hope everybody else did.
And we heard, I did not hear the show, but you're very against the Bears bringing in Kareem Hunt?
Well, I am right now. I think the key here, guys, is that I believe in second chances. I think that's who we are as a society, but I believe very strongly that you have to earn those second chances. It's not a, something that you're entitled to. It's not a God-given gift. And what the man did was horrible. And more than that, what's been discovered since is that he lied, past tense about it. There were two other assaults within a few months of that particular incident, those against men, not women. There's just a lot going on there. I think you add to that he hasn't been punished yet, and the league is going to punish him, and probably severely. They have a new policy now which says for any kind of domestic violence against a woman, it's a minimum 6 weeks. And I think based on the fact that he was not forthcoming about it, that there have been other incidences, he's going to miss at least 8 to 10 weeks, maybe a whole season, and you don't even know what that is yet. So I think that if he rehabilitates himself, if he proves that he understands his mistake, if he makes some efforts to make things better and to work on the problem, once you get clarity as to when he'll be available and what the punishment is, then maybe with a very rigid set of rules, you could consider bringing him in. But right now, I don't think you can even talk about it. And that is exactly what Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy said yesterday. I think what interested everybody, though, is it was pretty clear from the way that Matt Nagy said what he had to say that it's not only something that he wouldn't rule out. I got the sense he was almost hopeful that Hunt would do the things to give them a chance to try it.
You really think the punishment could be as much as a year?
Well, again, Dan, I think that's a possibility. I'm not predicting it. I do.
What would you predict?
Well, it's going to be more than 6 weeks because he lied about it. Listen, the next thing that Roger Goodell and the NFL office do that they don't screw up will be the first thing. So to try and predict what they're going to do, I don't know. But my guess is, based on the limited actual information that we have, is that he's looking at least 10 to 12 weeks.
I actually agree with everything Hub said. I believe in second chances. I think that he will get a second chance. And I said at the front end of our conversation at 4 o'clock, there's too many things that we just don't know right now. We don't know if he's gone through counseling. We don't know if he's remorseful. We don't know what his punishment's going to be. Once we know all of those things, though, Hub, I do think the football fit is undeniable. And if he gets reinstated, I expect the Bears to be on a very short list, if not the favorites, for Kareem Hunt.
Yeah, I would think that's reasonable. Now, there's another factor here that we've got to consider. a lot of this is based on Matt Nagy's experience. Ryan Pace, what was clear, he hasn't even thought about it. And Ryan Pace has the roster. Matt Nagy has the coaching staff, but Ryan Pace has the roster, and that's still only problem number two for Kareem Hunt. Whether the McCaskey family, you know, believes in second chances for something like this and would be willing to go along with it, that I don't know. I think it's an open question for all of us.
What else from the news conference yesterday turned you on or left you scratching your head, if there was anything that did that?
Well, nothing left me scratching my head. It certainly was great news to hear. And we knew, I think we talked about this over the last few weeks. It was pretty obvious that the undisclosed shoulder problem for Anthony Miller was a dislocation. They're confirming that now with this surgery. It's the only surgery it could be where they're going to tighten the ligaments around it. And the fact that he is, according to Ryan Pace, the only player they have right now who is scheduled for a significant surgery after the season, that's really unusual. I mean, that's really great news. They've had a remarkable year. There was certainly no doubt in my mind they were going to exercise the fifth-year option on Leonard Floyd. I guess some people wondered about that. They said, without hesitation, that's what they're going to do. I think beyond that, the Cody Parkey situation, they didn't say whether he'll be cut or not, but Ryan Pace said there absolutely will be competition at the position and did not say that Cody Parkey will be part of that competition. It was pretty clear to all of us in the room that Matt Nagy is pretty angry about it right now. And it's not about missing the kick, and it's not about, a lot of other things that it could be about. He just, he didn't like the TV thing. And I don't think that in itself, is a hanging, penalty or a hanging offense, I should say. But I was surprised that his anger was as clear as it was.
You think he'll work again? Will Cody Parkey get another job?
Oh, yeah. I mean, when the Bears signed him, he was a four-year veteran who at the time I think was the sixth most accurate kicker in the NFL. What I never understood about the signing is they made him the third highest paid kicker in the league, and he clearly only had 48 or 49 yard range.
Right.
So I didn't mind signing him, but I didn't get the money. That part of it, because they moved aggressively. Remember, he was a third or fourth day signing. So I'm not going to pretend that I knew they were wrong. I didn't. I didn't know what they were doing. But it was a little unusual. And so, he had a bad year, but show me a kicker who hasn't. A lot of them haven't had a year as bad as he had, but he's still got some skills, and so he'll kick somewhere. My guess is that he will not be on an opening day roster, but he'll be one of the first guys. Because, this was an unusually bad year for place kicking. This was not something that was isolated with the Bears. I mean, the nightmares the Vikings went through, the Chargers, teams all over the league were having these issues. And so there's going to be teams that will start the season thinking they've got it. By week two, week three, four, they'll be looking for a change. And Parkey will be on everybody's short list. So I think he'll kick again, but I don't think he'll be on an opening day roster.
Hub, how many other defensive coaches, in addition to Vic Fangio? We know Brandon Staley, the linebacker coach, is also gone. How many other coaches do you think they're going to have to replace?
I was encouraged, Danny, that they said yesterday that they are not giving up on Ed Donatell, that they are talking and trying to work something out. I've heard from a couple sources that there may be some other, personal or family considerations. I don't know if that's accurate or not. I think it's probably still less than 50-50 they can retain him, only because he interviewed for the job and didn't get it. And now you're going to ask him to work for the guy who did. That's always a little tricky. But it's, they didn't make it sound like a long shot either. I know that Jay Rogers is highly thought of around the league. I'm sure that Vic would make a run at him. They have not, there is nowhere, there's a lot of stuff you can find out about the NFL if you know where to look, but there's nowhere I know of that has a list of assistant coaches' contracts. So we're not even sure, which of these guys are out of contract or not. We knew that Donatell was, because that information came out, during the interviewing process. And I assume that the whole defensive staff might have been of Donatell I always draw a blank on his name, the outside linebackers coach who just left. But I don't know that for sure. And so whether Glenn Pyers is back, whether Jay Rogers is back, these are pretty good coaches. They talked yesterday about the importance of consistency and continuity. And so I think they'll make a real effort to keep as many of those guys as they can. I'm not worried about it because Chuck Pagano is not only an excellent hire as a defensive coordinator, he had 6 years as a head coach, three of them very successful, been around the league forever. He'll put a good staff together if he has to. But I don't think you want the number one defense in the NFL having to start over with an entirely new staff. If they can retain some of these guys, particularly Donatell, because of the job he did with the secondary, it would be a better thing. Now, that said, all of Chuck Pagano's background prior to being a defensive coordinator and a head coach was as a secondary coach. So it's not as if they're short on skills there, even if Donatell leaves.
Brandon Staley, the name you're looking for?
Yes, that is
okay.
The name. Thank you.
Thanks. Mark Grody knows them all. Oh, boy. Come on, baby. Like Glenn Pyers. Hey, we could have a really crappy AFC title game because of the weather on Sunday. Hub, they're calling for an Arctic blast in Kansas City. And I'm not in love with 54-51 games. That's not my favorite thing. But I believe when the stakes are their highest, the game should be played on an appropriate track so we could see the best at what they do what makes them the best. I mean, I suppose this is a problem without a solution. The NFL never has – I've never heard one conversation – about conference title games ever being played at neutral sites or in warm weather cities, where this is what we will have forever as football consumers. If you live in a cold weather city, there's a chance you'll have a really lousy game, right?
Well, there's two things there. There's a chance that you'll have a bad weather game. You know, whether it's a lousy game or not, I guess, remains to be seen. I will tell you that I don't think the league agrees that this is a problem. I think they consider it just to be the nature of the sport, the way it goes. Certainly we in Chicago have to appreciate it. I actually hold a rather strange distinction. I didn't know this until my friends at Westwood One reminded me the other day, but I was actually the sideline guy at the coldest playoff game in NFL history. You know, they talk about the Ice Bowl and the Freezer Bowl in Cincinnati in 82, and of course the Bears-Giants game. But forgetting wind chills with temperatures, the coldest one on record is the Vikings-Seahawks game that I did 3 years ago at University of Minnesota Stadium, where the temperature was 9 below at kickoff. And it was interesting. It was a sunny day, and if you were in the sun, it didn't seem that bad, and the play wasn't all that awful. It was just two teams that were very good on defense and not very good on offense. So, you know, the frigid blast by itself does not necessarily equal bad football game. You know, neither the Patriots or the Chiefs, who thrive on offense and the passing game, you know, you would think are ideally suited for it, although the way the Patriots ran the ball last week, and of course the Chiefs ran for 180 yards too, although 36 of that was on a Tyreek Hill jet sweep. You know, I don't know that it has to be a bad game. It's kind of unpleasant for the fans. It is interesting that the league was absolutely prepared to move the conference title game if the Chargers had earned it, because the stadium only held 27,000 people. So, you know, lose money and it's a different question. But, you know.
Wait, they really were going to do that?
Oh, yeah. There were serious conversations going on, and it wouldn't have taken much. You know,
I missed that.
I picked the Colts over the Chiefs, not convincingly, but I did their game the week before. I was so impressed with them. And the Chiefs come in with this record. You know, they were 0-7 at Arrowhead going back to 94 in the playoffs.
Where were they going to make the Chargers play?
Well, right in Los Angeles, they were going to go to the Coliseum. You know,
simple solution.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
It's not like they were going to go to it. Well, yes and no, Danny. I mean, I agree again. I think you live with what got you there, and that was playing in that stadium in Carson City. But it wasn't even the fact that it only held 28,000 or 29,000, because they didn't always sell it out. It didn't have it doesn't have, I should say, the appropriate broadcast facilities. You know, bringing the quality of the broadcast from that stadium is more difficult than other stadiums. There were other considerations. But yes, there were very serious conversations. They hadn't committed to it, but everybody I talked to said that while they hadn't committed to it, that was the plan, that they would have moved that game if the Chargers and the Colts had ended up in the championship game.
We're talking to Hub Arkish. We're going to give away some Cubs convention passes in our next segment. I did just see on the bottom line on ESPN a report that the Broncos are closing in with Ed Donatell to be their defensive coordinator.
Well, it shouldn't surprise anybody. I mean, you know, Ed and Vic go way back. As I said, there may be some considerations of where the family wants to be, and it has to be an easier situation for Ed Donatell. Now, you know, the problem with that is that it's not going to help him take a step forward because Vic is going to be his own defensive coordinator. He's already said he's going to call the defenses from the sidelines. So no matter how good that defense is, Ed's never really going to get much more credit than what he does with the secondary. So, you know, I think that was the Bears' hope in trying to convince him to stay here and have the defense all to himself. But, you know, they didn't hire him, and so this does make sense.
Hub, let's do the psychedelic 60s, if you don't mind. You want to go down memory lane with us?
If I can, I will.
You will.
I lost some memories from the 60s for obvious reasons.
Understood. I was born in 61. I remember all the fuss about Vietnam and civil unrest, and sports also had their share of unrest. The first Super Bowl was played today at the Coliseum in L.A., and that's why I wanted to bring that up. Packers over the Chiefs, 35-10. Two networks broadcast the game, and it's my understanding that a security fence had to be installed between them at their access sites because there was so much bad blood between the two. The AFL and NFL, there was a lot of contempt between the leagues at the time, and it took a while to get that thing pulled off. But what can you tell our listeners about how the greatest American sporting event came to be 52 years ago today?
Well, the linchpin behind the whole thing was Al Davis. And Al Davis was not the owner of the Raiders at the time, but he was the coach and GM. And he came up with the strategy in really 63 and 64, that the way to force a merger with the NFL or even to get them to expand and go into more cities was to target the top kids coming out of college and overpay them and force the NFL to spend more money than they wanted to. And he focused on quarterbacks. And so in 66, he struck a deal with the Rams' Roman Gabriel. Gabriel was under contract for one more year, so it wasn't going to take effect until 67. In April of that year, the other AFL owners, mainly Lamar Hunt, I think Bob Hausman was still there, Bud Adams, decided that Davis was obviously the guy who knew most about it, so they made him the commissioner. And inside of 2 months, he forced a merger with the NFL. And then, by the way, was so unhappy with the deal because he thought that the AFL wasn't getting anywhere near what they should, and because he thought he was going to be the commissioner of the new league, he voted against it, but everybody else voted for it. You had a merger, an agreement to play a Super Bowl for 3 years, but no interleague play until 70, and Davis was so irate that that led to all of his battles going forward with the league and Pete Rozelle over the next two or three decades. And, of course, the 65 signing of Joe Namath led to the big Jets upset of the Colts in 69-68 season, and the rest, as they say, is history.
I think winners got checks. The Packers got checks for $15,000 for winning Super Bowl I, but don't feel bad for them. They got about $8,500 for playoff money to get there, so they were prospering enormously. Commercial was $42,000 on either CBS or NBC. Just a crazy time. At what point did you start to get the impression this was going to be an American institution? Because it wasn't initially, was it?
No. It was a battle. The networks, it was CBS, of course, with the NFL. And I may have this backward. I think it was NBC that broadcast the AFL from day one, and I think ABC took over in 65. And it was that network TV money that kept them alive the first 5 years. Nobody really believed that the AFL was ready to play with the NFL and the way the Packers stomped the Chiefs and then the Raiders the second year. But it was Namath, and it was the Jets and Weeb Eubank. And as soon as year three, before interleague play had begun, for them to knock off the Colts, and then the next year, the Chiefs came back and beat the Vikings. So really, by the time interleague play started in 70, it was becoming pretty obvious that this was going to be, you know, a pretty cool thing, that you now had twice as much NFL. You know, a couple other quick ones, guys, I know this because I've got one here in my office. Tickets to Super Bowl I were $12. and I'll tell you what's even more interesting, Dan. Do you remember how much tickets were to the Bears Super Bowl 20?
I don't.
They were $50.
$50. And people probably complained at the time.
Well, it seemed like a lot of money, yeah. But I mean, now the cheapest seat in the stadium is $900, and the average price is about $1,400 or $1,500. And so, the game has changed a little bit over the years.
Yeah, yeah.
Just a little bit.
You know, when I think about the images that are indelibly etched in sports history, Namath walking off the Orange Bowl field from Super Bowl III with the finger in the air has got to be on the medal stand. Absolutely has to be.
You know, it's one of the great debates in sports, because when you look at Joe Namath's career stats, you ask yourself, what the hell is he doing in the Hall of Fame? You know, and it's not because he was the greatest quarterback to ever play the game, although he was a phenomenal thrower of the football in a very different time when all the rules were different. It was harder to do it. It was more about his character, his leadership, and his charisma. And he and Al Davis, I think everybody would agree. Well, Lamar Hunt is in there too, and Roselle. Those four guys are probably, more than anything else, the reason that the NFL is what it is today.
Hub, to bring you back to present day for just a second, I wanted you to weigh in on a poll question that we put out there yesterday. Because now we've seen a full season, and the question was career MVPs for Pat Mahomes. And we set the over-under at 2.5. And just before you answer, before people are like, oh, Parkins, Casey, whatever, he just turned in the third best statistical season any quarterback has ever had. 50 touchdowns, 5,000 yards. I'd put Brady's 07 season above him, Peyton's 55 touchdown season above him. You talk maybe Marino in 84, but I mean, it's one of the greatest quarterback seasons ever, and he did it at 22 years old. Brady has three MVPs. Manning has the record with five. What do you think we're looking at with Mahomes?
Well, you know, it's a great question, because I think even more than the number of MVPs these guys have, I mean, Aaron Rodgers, I believe, only has one. He might have two.
He has two.
Yeah, Brett Favre has three. I know that because he won three in a row. I don't think John Elway has one. You know, but if you look at the years that you're comparing it to, Brady and Manning only did once what Pat Mahomes did this year. So, you know, it's hard to underrate it or to discount it. It's pretty spectacular. But that said, it's unlikely to happen again.
Elway has one, by the way.
He does have one. Okay.
87.
You know, 2.5 is a pretty solid number, because I'm not ready to put him in the Favre, you know, Brady, Manning pantheon yet. But I'll certainly put him ahead of a lot of other guys who've won one. Matt Ryan won one a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm.
Cam Newton.
Over under at 2.5. Boy, I'm going to say under until I see more.
Okay.
You know, and it's not because I doubt his ability. It's just because it's
tall
rare.
Task.
It's rare air. Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to do.
Yeah, that was with the majority of the voters. I think it's probably where the smart money would be, but I'll be floored if he doesn't get at least one more.
Oh, yeah. I mean, listen, if you ask me just about ability, I would take the over. But then when you factor in the team he plays on, the injury factor, the bounce of the ball, there's so much that goes into this. It's just, you know, we see how rarely it's been done. And so that's the only reason I'm not doubting his ability. I'm just looking at the size of the job.
Great stuff, Hub. Thank you.
Thank you, Hub.
All right, guys, take care.
Talk soon.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.